Welcome back to the FKT Podcast. I'm your host, Heather Anderson. Today, I'm joined by Simon Franchu, who set the men's self-supported Sea to Summit to Sea FKT on Japan's Mount Fuji. His 11-hour, 26-minute run went up and down the mountain via a lesser-known route. Tune in to hear about his experience with his first FKT, what he'd do differently, as well as his tips for setting an international FKT while you're traveling. Thank you so much, Simon, for joining us on the show today. I'm excited to talk to you.
Yeah, well, thanks for the invitation.
You recently set the Sea to Summit to Sea FKT on Mount Fuji, and this was your first FKT on the site. So I'm wondering why you chose this particular route, because it's not really the standard way to climb Fuji as far as I know.
Yeah. So there were actually a couple of reasons. I was in Japan for a work trip. There were basically two things. So that I was going to a conference the week following the weekend I did the Mount Fuji ascent. And I had to, because I'm in the US on a visa, I had to actually get my visa renewed. So I had to make an appointment at the embassy to get my passport stamped, essentially. And between that appointment at the embassy and the conference, I had a couple of days, basically downtime, where I just had my presentation to prepare. But at the same time, I had a 100-miler coming up. So I should have been my peak training time. So I knew that I needed to do some running. And then I figured I will be in Tokyo. I can head over to Fuji. And then because there was a Mountain 100, I needed to get some elevation in. And then I saw that there's basically a route to do Mount Fuji Sea to Summit. And the fact that you can go sea level to above 12,000 basically sold me on trying that.
And what was the race you were training for?
It was the Wyoming Range 100.
And do you think Mount Fuji helped you in your race? Was it good? Did it end up being good training?
I mean, it was certainly good training, but of course, with 1 week of a conference, you don't get the running in.
Right.
You want. And on it, I'm living in Fort Collins, but then I did my peak volume at like sea level, kind of. I mean, I went up to 12,000 feet still, but it didn't feel optimal.
Right. Yeah. And so why did you choose up and back down the mountain instead of just to the summit as your FKT?
I mean, it's more fun, I think.
Right.
I mean, you get to run more. And then also, I didn't have a car. I didn't have anybody crewing. So it was basically a lot easier to just run back instead of trying to figure out how I get down from the summit.
Right. What are the logistics like for going up Fuji? I know it's a really popular climb. Is it pretty complicated to get there? Do you need permits? How does that work?
So as far as I understand it, there's basically only one trail where you need permits, and that is on the other side. That is, I think, the Yoshida Trail, which is, I think, the most popular one, and which is what all the tourists do.
Okay.
There is something that is an official hiking trail that is the route just sea to summit. It's called Mount Fuji Challenge 3800 or something. And they had this year for the first time that you actually need to apply or send in your plan for your route. And I just did that, even though I ended up doing more than what they did. And they had me pick up a wristband. I think the point of the wristband seems to be to make sure that you watch an educational video on that it can be cold up on Mount Fuji. And so I did this. I picked up the wristband. I forgot it on the day of my run, but nobody checked. So that wasn't an issue. But yeah, so that's what I did. I signed up. There's a website for this hike, and then you can basically register there.
And you were able to do that fairly last minute.
Yeah, so I did it, I think, 2 weeks before that.
Okay.
So before the trip. Because in principle, they were meant to send out the wristband to my hotel, but they weren't able to do that because they apparently got the wristbands too late. But I mean, that's what I did. I'm not even sure if that was how required that was, because I said nobody checked it. And yeah, I was kind of nervous about this as well, because you hear Mount Fuji is so crowded. But I think I was still relatively early in the season, so I think they still at school in Japan. And so that apparently makes that it's a bit less crowded. And so it was okay. I mean, you can't necessarily run the last, I don't know, what is it, maybe 2 miles. And also the first 2 miles of the downhill, just because there will be people. And yeah, I was also a bit nervous that Mount Fuji is apparently a spiritual site. So, I mean, you don't want to be bombing down a trail. Just being a Western tourist, you already feel kind of rude in Japan. So I try to.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you don't want to be disrespectful of pilgrims on the mountain.
Basically. Yeah, exactly.
So speaking of that, how busy was the mountain? Because I have heard that it can just be crazy busy. It sounds like maybe a little less so because of your time of year.
Yeah. As I said, I haven't done any of the other trails, which in my understanding are busier. Essentially, the thing is, if you do the C2 summit, it's only until mile 19 where the trails start that people are actually doing, because usually people take the bus up to the first station.
Okay.
And which is, yeah. And so that's when you start meeting people actually. And it was 6 a.m. and there were people, but it wasn't that I could pass them. It's very steep, so I was hiking anyways, but I could just hike past them without a problem. Maybe on the way down, there were two times where I actually had to stop and let people pass on more technical parts. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I didn't find it overly crowded.
Okay. You mentioned letting people pass on some technical parts. What is the trail like? Is there some scrambling? How technical is it?
I wouldn't say it's very technical. It's just very steep. It's definitely in excess of 20% grade. And then it's kind of rocky because it's a volcano. And then there's some parts that can be a bit looser. But I wouldn't say, compared to the other mountain running I did in Japan, it wasn't so technical.
And what about lower down the mountain when you first started out? When you left the sea, are you in a village there? Are you on roads? What is that lower part of that route like?
Yeah, I guess the lower part is kind of underwhelming. So there's Fuji City, at least the part where the route starts, is kind of industrial. So it's not the kind of picturesque Japan you would expect. It's okay. More just a very standard kind of industrialized city. And then this probably is like that for at least the first 8 miles. Oh, then wow. You get a bit more into rural areas, but you continue on roads. And I don't think you hit the road before maybe around mile, maybe 10, maybe 12. And then you start getting on a trail. And the first part is kind of horrible. So it's very... It's super washed out. So it feels okay. Like there might have been a trail at some point, but it does rain a lot there. And so it was just this kind of almost like a creek bed that was just super washed out, super rocky, and it was very slow. So that's where I thought I shouldn't have, because I followed mostly Paul Dekrit's route, but there's another route for the supported FKT. And looking back, I would not necessarily recommend Paul Dekrit's route because of this lower part where you first go into the forest, because it wasn't a lot of fun. It's just the trail is in bad condition. It's hard to find. Yeah, and this may be for like 4 miles. And then the trail condition improves and then it's actually nice to run. Or you can't really run that much because then it starts getting kind of steep. But there's this part which I thought was not very much. It was, yeah, pretty hard actually.
So what's the one-way distance to go to the summit on this route?
It's 23 miles.
Okay. So the first, you said 12, so almost the first half is on road. And then you have another 4 miles of not very nice trail. So really, not much of this route sounds like was very nice.
Yeah, I mean, the last part is kind of nice. I mean, it's it depends on what you expect, right? I looked at the map, I kind of knew what was coming. And it's still interesting because you get to see a bit of the Japanese countryside. Yeah, with trail running, I often ask the question, how much fun is it actually? But looking back, it was fun.
So that makes it type 2 fun, I think, when you look back and it was fun.
Yeah, so I would definitely, if I were to do it again, I would probably try and optimize the route. I would think it's probably more, could be both more beautiful and more enjoyable in terms of running.
How much ascent was there? Obviously, that's 12,000 whatever, but were there ups and downs or was it pretty much just a steady climb the whole way?
It's pretty much a steady climb the whole way. And it really, most of it is on the last probably 10 miles or less. It's like the climb at the beginning is just very gradual.
And then as you get onto the volcano, you actually, it gets steeper and steeper.
Yeah, I mean, the pictures I've seen of Fuji, it looks like a very classic volcano where the top is just very steep.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I saw it maybe once in the fog. Even the day that I ascended it, I couldn't really see it. I didn't really see because it was covered in low clouds. So there were low clouds. And so you first see it when you're kind of above the low clouds, but then you're too close to actually see the volcano.
Right, because then you're on the volcano, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What was the weather like? It sounds like it was pretty cloudy. Was it raining or was it just clouds?
Yeah, so I actually had this two-day window, and my initial plan to do it, to start Thursday night and do it into a Friday morning. But I had 2 days of just only rain. It was just raining in Fuji. Oh, wow. But I was able to push it back one day. And so when I started at 12 a.m., it was still kind of, there was still a bit of drizzle. But then as soon as I came above the low clouds, that there was actually blue sky. So the weather was good. It was sunny.
Mm-hmm.
On the way back, it was actually sunny. So the weather was good on the way back, which got pretty hot.
Okay. Yeah, I was going to say, I've heard summers in Japan are very warm.
They are very warm and they are very humid.
Yeah. Was it humid on the mountain even or just at the lower elevations?
No, just at the lower elevation. Because I was running at night, it was kind of okay. But then on the way back, the last 10 miles, they were hot and humid. Yeah. And
well, especially if you're on a road at the end too. I assume you're just out in the sun at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And were those roads paved or are they dirt roads or was it a mix?
They're paved. Yeah, they don't always have shoulders, but they're pretty small roads. So traffic was not really an issue.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering if you had to deal with cars. Like obviously when you're at night, probably not, but when you were finishing up. So you mentioned that the trail was in pretty rough shape. So it sounds like maybe not a lot of people do this particular trail. But overall, how are the trails on Fuji marked? What was your navigation method and experience?
Yeah, so I just put the GPX track on my watch. That made it pretty easy, I think. And then the trail, basically, as soon as you hit the official trail, so the first station that you encounter where people actually start hiking it, there are two ropes on the sides of it. So you can't actually leave the trail.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So as soon as you hit the part that is crowded, there's no way of missing the trail.
So is it like that all the way to the summit? You have ropes along the trail?
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, I guess that's probably good for erosion. It keeps people on the trail.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly.
I've read that there are some sort of huts on the mountain. And you mentioned resupplying at vending machines or getting water from vending machines. And so can you tell me a little bit about that? Because the idea of being able to get use a vending machine on a mountain seems really...
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny.
Really bizarre.
There are those stations. I think they're called stations, at least on the maps that I see. They're like numbered stations on the way up. And they're probably about, as I said, I think the first one is at maybe about 10,000 feet.
Okay.
And then they're maybe, I don't know if they're like at 500 feet difference or 1,000 feet difference. So there's a couple of them. And yes, they do have vending machines there. But what I experienced was that the first one, they turned off the vending machines at night. So that's something to maybe be mindful about if that is part of your water plan. I think the most difficult thing was actually water. I had a filter on me because I thought it's raining so much, there must be streams. But there were no streams.
Oh, wow.
I basically just had to wait until one of the vending machines, until there was a station with a vending machine that was on, that was not turned off.
I thought that a huge number of people climbing the mountain try to be up there for sunrise. So it seems weird that they would have the vending machines off at night.
I was surprised.
That's when people would be going up the mountain.
I was surprised too. Again, the trail that I went up was not the most popular one because also it seemed like at 6 a.m. people were just starting to go up.
Okay.
And it didn't seem like everybody was already up there.
Yeah, I mean, I know there's a lot of different ways to climb the mountain. I was trying to get a sense of these different routes. Like I went to the Mount Fuji website to climb the peak and find out information when I was researching for your episode here. And one of the things that I thought was, well, it stood out to me, was there was a big banner right on the website that said you must carry a helmet above a certain elevation because it's an active volcano. And that, you know, if an alarm goes off, you have to go down the mountain. Like, was that covered in the video you had to watch to get your wrist? Or is that something that's just happening right now, maybe? I don't know.
I don't think it was covered in the video I watched, to be honest. Maybe I ignored it intentionally. I wasn't wearing a helmet, but I also felt that I didn't see too many people wearing helmets there.
With this many people on the trail, did you see any wildlife?
I saw deer.
Okay.
But that was in the forest further down.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all of the wildlife that I encountered, I think.
Right. Yeah, I would think at a mountain with that many people on it, there probably wouldn't be a lot of wildlife.
No, that's true. But yeah, it is really when you do the whole sea to summit, the lower part that you do, it feels like nobody's really doing it. So.
Right. Yeah.
No, yeah, as I said, it's basically from like 2,000 feet, 10,000 feet, around 10,000 feet where it gets crowded, where people start appearing. And below that, there was, I think, three hikers that I met coming up when I came down.
So you mentioned that you chose this because you were in Japan on a work trip. So do you have any tips for our listeners who might want to attempt an FKT when they're traveling? Maybe things you learned on this, like how to work an international, either a peak bagging trip or an FKT, like into your travel plans.
Yeah. My approach, because this was a work trip, so I was kind of busy. I did not have too much time to prepare. So I think I just went out there and I was just willing to turn back, right? Because there were a lot of unknowns and I was, yeah, I didn't have the goal of setting an FKT.
Okay.
I didn't set out to just do the FKT. I just was aware that that was a fairly low-hanging fruit. I just knew that if I make it through without bigger issues, then I would probably set a new one. But yeah, I think my approach was just like, take the things as they come, and if I have to turn around, I turn around. And of course, one advantage of Mount Fuji is that it's fairly close to civilization. It's not very remote. And so I didn't feel like I was taking a big risk with this kind of approach.
And I assume with as straightforward as this was, you didn't exactly have to bring any sort of technical gear with you. It was kind of things you would have already had.
No, exactly. I just had a headlamp, and then I had actually brought my Garmin InReach just to be sure. But except from that, just calories, and that was it, I think.
Were you able to pick up your calories there, or did you bring those with you to Japan?
I brought them with me to Japan.
Okay. Yeah. The things that you know work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, this was the training for the 100 miler. So I was trying to establish a nutrition plan. So I had all my stuff already lined up.
Right, right. That makes sense. I think that would be a hard thing if you were going to try to set something internationally and just being like, oh, I'll just get whatever I find when I get there, especially if you're very used to eating certain things, that might not go so well.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, that's definitely one thing I would recommend. I mean, it depends, of course, on what you eat. So I can just go on Tailwind for a long time. And so that's a very easy thing to bring. And
is that predominantly what you used for Fuji, was just Tailwind, or did you have some other things with you?
Yeah, I had basically half Tailwind and then half the Morton gels.
No savory food?
No savory food, no.
Is there anything else about this experience you'd like to share with our audience?
I don't know. It was fun. Yeah. So I can definitely recommend it. It's an interesting way to see Mount Fuji. It's not, probably not. If you want to do beautiful running in Japan, this might not be your number one. This should not be your number one plan, because I think there's probably much more beautiful running in Japan. I thought about how many places are there where you can actually go from sea level to above 12,000 feet. And I don't think there's actually so many of them.
There's really not. I think a lot of islands is about it. I've done Haleakala that way, but I don't think it goes quite that high. You know, there's not a lot of places with that elevation change.
Yeah. And so that was something that I thought was fun and maybe worth doing if you get the chance.
Yeah, there's definitely a certain appeal to that for sure.
Yeah, and okay, I don't think if you would ask me, do you want to do a trip to Japan just for this? I probably wouldn't have done it, to be honest. It was really more like things came together for this opportunity to present itself, and I went for it.
Right. I think the best adventures work out that way.
Yeah, this was definitely a lot of fun. And yeah, just having been on Mount Fuji is kind of a cool feeling, I think.
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely on my to climb list, but probably not the way you went. Thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate you sharing with us.
Yeah, of course.
Thanks again, Simon, for coming on the show. You can read about his FKT on the website, fastestknowntime.com.